The Money Show. Shapeshifters.
I've been waiting for tonight's shapeshifter for years. Dr. Cheryl Calder in studio with us this evening, the founder of iGym. I was playing with iGym games today. Can I call them games? I was playing with iGym online today and I got pretty knackered. I was pretty tired by the end of it. It's quite hard work, Cheryl Calder.
Yeah, I hope it's hard work so that you can realize that those skills need to be trained as well.
Because you call it visual intelligence training. Explain.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's we've discovered that through research, etc., and work with initially with elite athletes all over the world, that that your eyes can be trained, and that your eyes have muscles, and your brain can be trained, which is in effect a muscle as well, and that you can impact then the motor response, and we've also shown that you can impact decision making. So teams and people all over the world that make the most effective decisions, and especially under pressure, are the ones that are most successful.
But in the world of professional sport, and I think it's most cruelly exhibited, for example, in the final of, say, the 100-meter swimming in the Olympics, where 1/100th of a second can make the difference between gold and silver, if not bronze. I mean, in the world of professional sport, where athletes are operating at the absolute peak of their possible performance, any minuscule improvement is the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we work in milliseconds, and we find that if you see and process information quicker, that it actually gives you more time to make an effective decision. So it gives you, you know, in sport they talk about having time on the ball. In business, it's about thinking on your feet. So it's that kind of decision making.
Take me back to where it starts. Does it start at UCT? Where does it start?
All my research.
Yeah, iGym. Oh, I mean, what is the very genesis of iGym?
It really started when I was a really young kid, where I was just challenged by how do you do that, how do you see that, and why can you do it better? And I mean, as a kid, I think I drove my parents crazy because I was doing all these experiments of how can I do that quicker and more effective, and etc. from a young kid. And then
were you particularly good at sport? I mean, were you pushing your own personal performance, or were you just curious?
I was, but I think it's a combination of doing all these things that made me good. So so it started as a young kid, and then we were isolated, and I had this yearning to play hockey for South Africa and then measure myself against the best athletes in the world. And so I went out secretively and went and played in different countries. And while I was there, I found out people saying to me, how did you see that? How did you do that? And I thought, well, don't you see what I see? And then I realized, no, I do see differently.
So you had trained yourself with the basics before you did your own research, but you trained yourself instinctively almost in looking differently at the way in which the hockey stick connects the ball,
yeah,
the way in which it moves across the field.
Yeah, absolutely. A whole lot of, I mean, there's so many different skills, but I kind of trained myself unknowingly just by being challenged, and it developed into a science.
When did the research then start, the formal research, beyond your own personal achievements?
Early 90s already, when I was at Stellenbosch University. I'd already gone and played overseas on my own and already discovered that there are skills that are trainable, and did my initial research at Stellenbosch University, and then did my PhD under Tim Noakes at UCT.
I mean, did anybody ever look at you and say, yeah, of course you can? This isn't science, this is hocus pocus. Did anybody ever express that sort of doubt?
Well, when I started out, of course. But I never doubted, because I said it worked for me. So I have the proof.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I did my research, so I had that proof as well. And then the people I started working with just realized it made a difference. So, you know, I had all that proof. So it didn't really matter. Of course, people think you're crazy when you do something that other people haven't done before. So,
And at what point do you then take this research and put it into a formal business? You create the business that is iGym, and you then export this intellectual property that you have evolved over the last nearly 30 years.
Yeah, well, it also started way back, where I was actually you know, I worked with the All Blacks in 2000 already. I worked with Australia cricket way back then. I worked with Pakistan cricket in 1998. And I used to manually do this training with athletes. Or, you know, at some stage I was working with, say, England rugby and Australia cricket. And then I realized, no, I needed to develop something that I could leave with them. And then I discovered I needed to develop something that I can monitor when I'm not there, because, you know, the human being will always find a way of not doing things or,
of course,
or being slack or something. So I needed all of this. And, I mean, way before the internet existed, I already put stuff on disk, and in ways I posted this off to athletes and left it with them. And that developed to where I am today.
I mean, you've got one particular game that you've got. It says, you know, pick a symbol on in a square and follow it around the particular square. And I was very good for about 10 or 12 seconds. And then you must be kidding. And trying desperately then to keep tabs, I chose the guitar, I think it was, and chasing this blooming thing around the square. And after about 25 seconds, it was, no, I can't do this anymore. It's the same sort of thing as somebody who goes to the gym after a long period of being a couch potato. It's a challenging process. Yeah. Now, that process, as simple an experiment as it is, do that often enough, and if you don't have an epileptic fit, it makes your eyes fit in the same way as your body gets fit by doing weights.
Yeah, exactly that. But at the same time, we've designed the program in such a way that it's sophisticated enough to also train your brain, so the process in your brain, because that information that your eyes taking in, if they're seeing it accurately and quick enough, also has to be processed in the brain. And then that information's got to go through and tell you, you know, hit the ball or make a decision or whatever you have to do, whatever you're involved in, driving a car, you know. People do that on a daily basis.
Dr. Cheryl Calder is our shapeshifter this evening, the founder of iGym. Now, if all of this is applicable in sport, then if you can train your brain to do things that you didn't know that it could, because you see things differently, you maybe see it quicker, you think faster on your feet, how does it adapt to the world of business, I wonder? More with Dr. Cheryl Calder in just a moment.
The Money Show. Shapeshifters.
So the business is 20 years old, Dr. Cheryl Calder, founder of iGym. Is it fair to say the business, the formal business, at what point do you register the brand iGym and start formalizing and getting your systems in place, as Pavlos Fotidis teaches us every week we need to do?
Yeah, 20 years, probably fair to say, but a lot more than that when the actual thoughts started and process started.
Sure, but when you started making some proper money out of it, started making a profit, 20 years?
You know, I was always happy to help people, and if someone said, oh, can I do your program? I said, of course, here it is, just take it, you know, and just if I can make you better, that's cool.
But you've learned since then,
I have learned a lot since then, yes.
Where did you learn the business skills? Because it's all well and good to be a scientist. It's all well and good to be a nice and helpful person and enhance the performance of some of the world's greatest teams. And I think you're the only woman in the world who's ever been part of two World Cup winning squads. That's nice. But this is intellectual property. This is stuff that is worth money.
Obviously, people wanted it, and of course, some people try to get their hands on it, and that gave me a bit of a wake-up call. I have a colleague called Christy Berto, who joined me in 2007, I think, and she added the business side to it. And then, obviously, we have now we have guys involved like Michael Jordan, who also
is he still invested? Because he's like a bit like a kid who's got a new toy when he makes an investment he likes. And I remember him telling me about you years ago and going, oh, you've got to speak to Cheryl Calder.
Yeah, no, he's a cool guy, and he's obviously the business side of it. We also have a guy involved, a colleague, Jeremy, and he does the production side of it, of, you know, the product as such. So there's a whole lot of business involved in iGym at the moment. I'm still the kind of scientist and hands-on. You know, I do a lot of consulting with elite teams and elite players and feed the information back to them. But it's not just feeding it back. They've got to put it all together as well. So it's a combination of all of us.
But the world has moved on since the days you were popping floppy disks into brown paper envelopes and posting them to professional sports people around the world. The world of virtual reality and technology and instant communication, courtesy of the glories of the World Wide Web, must have fundamentally changed your business.
We're exploring that as well, and we're doing some really interesting work at the moment with the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, NFL is enormous sport in the world and enormous in the States. And we're busy exploring, you know, those avenues as well.
Well, I mean, it's really exciting that you're getting it into the world of sport. But you inferred earlier that this has got application beyond just sport. This is about enabling quicker, smarter, more effective decision making, which brings us into the world of business, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talk about the digital age, and there's really good and bad in that. We find that using mobile phones has destroyed some of the skills which we think are effective in being productive in business. And
so you say we live in the age of distraction.
Yeah, you know, we just on our mobile phones and all the digital platforms, and we see something. If we don't like it, we move on and we just go to something else. So the skills of attention and concentration don't get trained anymore, because you become attentive not by because you're born with that skill. It's because you train that skill and you develop it. And in the age of distraction that we're in now, it's never required of you. You know, we just flit from one thing to the other thing all the time. Kids have that problem. In fact, I had a really interesting experience last week. I was in a presentation with a big bank, and I was looking around the room, and there were lots of people involved, and a lot of them were distracted, their minds wandering. I could see that. There were some of them on their phones, not doing things that we were doing in the room at the time, and that's just where we are. We just can't help ourselves. We just want to be distracted all the time, and that affects productivity absolutely directly.
And so how then do we harness what we're capable of doing using your principle of iGym? Because there is the risk that we kind of think that it's all about connecting eye-hand coordination, but this is far more. This is about ensuring teams become more effective as a result of returning back to an era where concentration is at an optimum.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the great offshoots of doing iGym is the ability to concentrate better. And we have tons of people who come back in business, in sporting teams, just saying, thank you for helping our teams to concentrate again.
But like going to do regular exercise, I'm assuming that this requires consistent discipline. You can't sort of do iGym for a month and think that you're fighting fit, and 6 months later, you've probably regressed to your bad habits if you've not maintained some kind of, can I call it a fitness regime?
Yeah. The nice thing about iGym, you only require to do 10 minutes per session. And
this is my kind of exercise. I'm liking you already, yes.
Yeah, it's cool. And 10 minutes a session, and then 3 to 4 times a week. And the nice thing about the eyes and the brain, once you get them up to a fitness level and you use them effectively, be it in driving, be it in work you're doing, be it in sport, you're actually using the eyes and the brain and the body all the time. So you maintain the level of fitness a lot better than you know, the body, the physical system. So, but you still need to get it fit enough and get it up to standard to get to that point.
Okay, so where does iGym go next then? I mean, here you've created this great intellectual property. You've got an export market for intellectual property. You've got all of this on your side. Where do you go next?
Well, we've just spent a great amount enhancing the whole platform of iGym, making it really accessible to the whole world. So that's really exciting for us. You know, up until now, we've worked with our bespoke clients, and it's now open to everyone and anyone to go on and improve their abilities.
So how do you monetize that? Or do you do it like the internet does nowadays, to get you hooked, get you interested, and then as you get to a certain level, you go, oh, no, you have to pay.
Yeah, well, for anything that's valuable, you have to pay. So the benefits are enormous. You can ask any of the people that we've ever worked with.
I don't know. I mean, average golfers like Ernie Els, for example. you might drop that name. I mean, you've done wonders with Ernie, and I think he's paid publicly, paid tribute to the work that he's done with you.
Yeah, I mean, winning that British Open with him really turned his career around. 2012.
I mean, yeah. he was thought to be past it.
Yeah, he was ready to give up.
And you brought him back.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
What did you do specifically with Ernie, if you don't mind sharing some of the detail, that brought him back from the brink of retirement?
Well, Ernie was at a point where he decided that's it, he's not going to play anymore because his putting was so bad. And I actually caught up with him at a tournament and said to him, just do a few putts. And I saw that it really was not nearby standard, but it was a combination of what he was seeing, because it got to a point where a lot of people were saying to him, you can't judge anymore. And if you can't judge, you can't putt, because, you know, you have to judge line and length, etc. And then that information, obviously, we needed him to concentrate better, and we needed him to take that information, put it into his hands. His hands at that point weren't great. So we worked on a combination of all those skills. And if you saw that last putt on the 18th at that British Open, then you'll know that he was back to full fitness.
And I mean that, and you're in the background of all of these great sports teams. You're clearly being taken very, very seriously in what is predominantly a male environment. How hard was it to get acceptance?
Yeah, you know, I think it's tough. You know, being a woman in those environments. But for me, I didn't even think like that. I just thought that I am an individual offering a certain skill to enhance your performance, and if I'm a guy or girl, doesn't matter. You know, it's about what I'm teaching you. So I had to be brave at times. I was discredited at times, but didn't really matter.
I mean, it's an innate sense of self-belief, I guess. And the fact that you've got some fairly hefty funders on board, yeah, in order to grow this business. I mean, do you still control it? Are you the controlling shareholder?
I am, yes.
And that's good. That's very good. So you've held on to control. Are you obsessed with control? Have you been advised that you must never let go?
No, I've traveled enough places and seen enough things to realize that you need to have a team around you, and you need to trust them, and you need to take risks.
How big's the team?
Within our office, three. We have a team who do our platform for us. We have a team who do our branding for us. We have a team who develop our drills. We don't call them games. Our training drills first.
Drills. I'll use that word now. Thank you.
And then we have Angel Hub, who are our investors. And so we're quite an extensive team. And then the people I learn from all over the world, and all the teams I work with, probably are indirectly part of our team as well.
Dr. Cheryl Calder, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in. The founder of a great South African export called iGym, our shapeshifter.